the Houses of Parliament, home to British politics. But you don't need to come here to see politics. Politics is everywhere, 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 everywhere.
Transport. Law and Order. NHS. Education. Teachers moaning and that. Defence.
So the next time you're walking around your town, open your eyes and see the politics that... Sorry, mate. Sorry. Actually, this illustrates my point. Look at this poor little fella. He's really political. Isn't he? Let's take a closer look. One, he's a bit racial. What sort I am?
What sort? I'm like Egyptian by birth.
Egyptian. Now, you can't get more political than that these days around that sort of area. So you're wearing a fez?
No, I'm alright.
Let's get him a fez.
Not wearing a fez.
No, just put a little fez on.
I'm not
wearing a fez. Really good, mate.
I'm not wearing a fez. I'm not wearing a fez.
I'm not wearing a fez, pal. So, right, one, racial. Two, you're handicapped a little. Oh, yeah. Is it rubbish?
Well, I'm disabled, if that's what you mean.
Yeah. What sort are you?
Well, I got polio when I was young.
Oh.
You can't catch it.
Okay, good. So, you're leg mental, but not head mental. So that's two. Three, gay.
Not gay.
Well, no, no.
No.
Probably get what you can.
I'm not gay.
In that state, there's nothing to be ashamed of. So that's three political hot potatoes, all in one little weird fella. So,
I'm not gay.
Can I get you out?
No.
Oh, go on, let me see what it looks like.
No,
I want to see what it looks
you're
like.
You're not right,
please.
Mate. You're not right.
Come on,
you're
please.
Not right, mate.
Let me just have a look.
Get
let
off.
Let me have a look what it looks
fuck
like.
Fuck off. Come on, mate. Fuck off. Come on. Nothing
back now. Do you know that one off the BBC iDents?
Yep.
Wow. I'll tell you what. Do you want me to read you a little story?
I'm 31, mate.
Should really be walking by now, then. And they're grumpy, some of them. Got a little hat and everything. Still not happy.
Please welcome to the stage, Ricky Gervais.
Thank you. Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. Good evening. I hope you enjoyed that little short at the beginning. Or Ash, as I call him. They've got names. They've got names. Individuals. You're learning something already, because that is totally factually accurate, that short educational film. He is really Egyptian. He is really disabled. He's not gay. He wanted me to point that out. He is heterosexual. And in fact, he's looking for a girlfriend and wanted me to sort of do a shout-out for any prospective wives. How can I big him up? The sex is shit, but you can park up right next to Tesco's. So swings and roundabouts. Every cloud, right? I can't wait for him to see this show. Oh, no, he'll be alright, he's a good sport. If the sport is table tennis. So. They fucking love that, don't they? They can't get enough of that. It's lovely. Oh, no. All right there? That is high, isn't it? I did the Royal Albert Hall last month, and that's fucking scary. But that was good, actually, because that was a charity event. And I don't do enough for charity. I do a bit, but you can always do more. But I look at it like this. It's a pain, isn't it? Nothing in it for me. Yeah. No, it was, all the money was going to teenage cancer. So, well, say all the money after expenses, if you're allowed to. Wait. Shouldn't cost me anything, should it? So, I went by helicopter. Fucking brilliant. There are so many charities these days. I do what I can, but when I was growing up, there was just Oxfam. You knew where you were, do you know what I mean? Done well if you've got shares in that. That's gone from strength to strength, isn't it? Because you'll always have famine. No, there are loads, and you get them coming up to you in the street with their little tunics on, and you have to cross the road, but then you get got by another set, you know what I mean? And I've been caught about 6 times, and I've filled them out. Once you're caught and it's £2 a month, you fill it out, you know. Particularly now they recognise me, I don't go, oh, he was mean, right? Or spotted in heat. Gervais says no to Alzheimer's, so it's all right if it's for Alzheimer's. So I go, we did this a minute ago, mate. What's... That really worries them. No, but you give your bank details and your telephone number, and I've had no bad experience with that, I must say. But I have had my fingers burnt once with a charity appeal. It was actually in a broadsheet newspaper, because I thought it was quite reputable, and it was for sponsorship of a child, a Rwandan orphan. And I had a picture of a little 10-year-old Rwandan girl, and a picture of a Cabbage Patch doll. And I remember it said, Cabbage Patch doll, £28, little Zuki, just £5 a week. So I filled the form out and I sent it off, and as soon as I posted it, I thought, fuck, if she lives till she's 18, it's cost me £2,000. I'd have paid for the Cabbage Patch doll outright. But the way they worded it, they made that one look like the better deal. It's confusion. So just look, be careful. I don't want you to get stung like I did. It can be a con, like that one was. Oh, dear. So, yeah. I warmed up at the Royal Albert Hall for you, so... Actually, I did do a couple of warm-ups before that. I just want to tell you about one of them. Absolutely true story. We did this little theatre, and we stayed in a place just outside Luton called Dunstable. Fucking hell. It's good. Stayed in this 2-star hotel.
Me!
Full of white trash. I don't want to deny my roots, but I'm out of that now. So I expect a little bit more. No, and the road manager came back and said, I've booked you in. Just go straight in. Just go straight through the bar and your room's at the end of the corridor. Just hide out there. No one will bother you, and I'll pick you up at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. You'll be all right. I went, oh, God. He went, oh, I must warn you, there's a wedding on. Oh, for And honestly, I walked in, it's loud, packed with people, bloke in a suit, could have been the groom, I don't care. I walked in, and he went, Brent! Oh, for fuck's sake. What's the best he thought could happen with that? What was he hoping for? That I'd hear him shout that, and I'd turn around and go, who said that, then? That is brilliant. Was it you?
Yeah, it was me.
Brent, you little sausage. What were you just shouting it like?
You just think of that. Oh, just shouting it out. That's brilliant. Just, oh, God. I was going to bed, but do you want to be mates?
It's got better. About a year ago, I work in XFM sometimes, and about a year ago, I got into the lift, and just as the lift doors were closing, a bloke sort of made it in. I think he was a workman there. He had a little logo on his shirt. And he clocked me, and he went, and I went, right? He went, and then he went, where's Monkey? And instead of going, that's not me, mate, that's Johnny Vegas, I went, oh, he's at home. And they started going, oh, I think you're brilliant in those. And I was going, thanks very much. Oh, dear. But I can't complain. I have had a good year. Went to America at the beginning of the year. Won a couple of globes, thank you very much. No, I'm not telling you that to show off. I'm telling you that to compare it with the week I had before I went to America. That wasn't such a good week. I was sitting at home, I think it was about the second week in January. I don't know if you saw it. I was watching telly, and there was that programme, Celebrity Stars and Their Doubles with Dale Winton. Yeah, sure, there was a Brent lookalike, who won his category, just a fat bloke. He had a tie and a goatee. Just a fat bloke. Most like Brent in the world. Unbelievable. About 45, about 18 stone. In fact, he was so fat that when he got up to get his award off Dale, he actually had that fat bloke waddle. And Dale Winton said, you even walk like Ricky Gervais. even Brent anymore. Just a fat bloke he was, though. I couldn't believe it. So I've started wearing black all the time now. Got a complex. It's slimming. It works. Pavarotti always wears black, doesn't he? And no, you see him in pastel and he's a chunky little fucker. So welcome to my new show. Bit worried about what to charge. I thought 25 quid's a lot of money. And I looked at other TV comedians that were charging less than me. Then I thought, fuck it, you get what you pay for. Some people charge 25. Jim Davison, live at the 25. Strictly no spastics. Except for Jim, they put him off. It's a word you don't hear very often, isn't it? Spastic. Again, in the 70s, all the rage. No, but they changed their name. The society. Individuals, they weren't... Oh, well, you know what, I'm going to christen it. No. It was called the Spastic Society, and that was a normal word. And they changed their name to Scope. And they changed their name to Scope because spastic had started being used as a derogatory term, particularly in playgrounds. Like, bullies would pick on disabled kids, and they'd say, oh, spastics. They changed it to Scope, and now that doesn't happen. It can't, does it? I mean, what would happen now if a bully picked on a little friend in a wheelchair, went, oi, spastic! Little friend in a wheelchair would just go, I think you'll find it Scope. Oi, Scopey! Oh, fuck! My impression of a wheelchair user. Not Thora Heard, that's just that. She had a posh one. She didn't even bother with that. Never off her arse, was she? She could walk, I'd seen her walk. She'd go shopping in one of those things, all the way home, right up to the front door, key in the door, straight in the stair lift, feet haven't touched the ground yet, up to the bathroom, oh, lowered into the bath. Never off her arse. Give her an award, she's up there like a fucking greyhound. Same as that Stephen Hawking, lazy. Most intelligent man on the planet, and I'm having a go. Brilliant. Most intelligent man on the planet, but not such a good judge of character. Happily married. Kids. Nurse. And now, according to some, my lawyers have told me to say, she leaves him out in the sun, she smacks him round the head for a laugh. Isn't that terrible? He must be thinking, oh, what happened to all the fucking blowjobs? Ow. Spell the whole word. Ouch. But there's no evidence. The charges were dropped. So that's not how he got the cuts and bruises. It's probably all the skateboarding he does. So, why politics? Because I want to give something back to society. Fuck off, I do. You don't know. And I can't enjoy this life when I see injustice, suffering, inequality. And I want to live and die, if necessary, by the morals I hold dearly, like Martin Luther King and Gandhi and Ben Elton. People have a problem with Ben Elton now. They think he's sort of sold out all his principles and just made as much money as he could, and he's just an annoying little twat. That may be the case, but they never have a go at Gandhi, do they? That's what I'm here. No, that's what I'm here for. A bit of balance. Never mind having a go at Ben Elton. What about Gandhi? He could be annoying. Look at me. I'll tell you a story about Gandhi. True story. When he came to England in 1930 summer, I haven't looked it up. It was taking 30 seconds. I can't be bothered. I'll have it ready for tomorrow. Right. It was 1930 summer, and he got off the plane. Pretty sure it was a plane. Heathrow, Terminal 1, and it gets off. Oh God, Mahatma Gandhi in our little country, surrounded by journalists, photographers. They couldn't believe their luck. And one little journalist went, "Mr. Gandhi," respectful like, said, "Mr. Gandhi, what do you think of Western civilization?" And Gandhi said, "I think it would be a good idea." Ooh, yes, Saki. For someone who doesn't want to get into a fight, he's a little bit. I mean. Fucking hell. And what Abda sarcasm being the lowest form of wit? Oh no, highest form of wit when Gandhi says it. If I'd have been that reporter, I'd have said, "Oh, very good, I'm not putting that. I'll ask you again. What do you think of Western civilization?" "I told you, I think it would be a good idea." "All right, okay. I'm taking back your degree from London University. Oh, and your national health specs. What do you think of it now, Mr. Magoo?" Yeah. Sarky bastard. He went to the same university as me, University College London. And I think it was there where I turned away from politics, because I'd been interested, sort of, you know, all my life, particularly that 15, 16, 17, becoming politicised, hanging out in the sixth form and discussing communism and stuff. And I do things like, I used to sell anti-Nazi league badges and collect for the miners, because it was noisy, mainly. And I even had that poster of Che Guevara on my wall at home to annoy my mum. It backfired, she thought it was Robert Lindsay. And then, when I got to college, there were people better at that than me. Do you know what I mean? There were people that really meant it. And I was thinking, oh God, was I like that? I'll give you an example. I did philosophy. And after a few weeks, you had to choose your options for the 3 years. And compulsory subjects were logic and Greek philosophy. And you had to choose about six others. And I chose philosophy of science, philosophy of mind, morality. And there was a Marxism option. And I thought, that'd be great, I've always been interested in that, and I'll do it. And it was only a small department, 25 people, and the tutors were all out, and you had to queue up and tick the thing you wanted. And I looked over at the queue for Marxism, and there were 10 people in this queue. 3 of them were wearing berets. And I thought, God, I can't spend 3 years in a room with what I used to call at the time, cunts. The first bloke I saw hooked up with was the opposite of that. He was this big lumbering chemist called Pete Bront, yeah? And I think he was about the first person I met, and he lived literally opposite me in the corridor at Eye for Evans Hall in Camden. And 18, like the rest of us, but the mind of a 55-year-old fascist cab driver. Do you know what I mean? Like, just society was going to the dogs and, oh God, oh, the things I could do if I was in charge. That sort of thing. And I remember there was an advert at the time for Strongbow. And at the end of the advert, 2 arrows were fired from a longbow that went and split the wood on the bar. That gave him the horn, that advert. Because he used to imagine executing muggers and rapists like that. And it would come on and he'd go quiet. And he'd be watching it, like that. And then, as I go, you go, "Ooh, that was in the head." And he also used that to exorcise demons. Like, he walked along the street, and it was like early 80s, so if he saw someone come the other way, like a bloke with long hair and makeup or something, he'd just watch him, and he'd go, "Oh." He'd be imagining killing him. But, once we were walking home from college, and he used to go in every day and buy his Evening Standard, right? And it was a little kiosk, I don't know if it's still there, but it was like just 2 piles of standards and a little old woman selling them. And he went in this particular day, bought his standard, 10p, looked at it, and the cover story that day was a big photograph of an old age pensioner. She'd been mugged, and there was a picture of her and it was cuts and bruises, an awful story. And the old lady, just making conversation, she probably said it to everyone who came in that day. She went to Pete, "It's awful, isn't it?" And he went, "Yeah, gentlemen. Yeah, she's 93. Scarred for life." "But you leave it, don't you?" Pete went, "Well, it's not scarred for life then, is it?" She went, "What?" He went, "You scar a baby for life, don't you?" She went, "But if she lives till she's 100, she's only been scarred for 7% of her life." He did the maths for her. Like, this old woman's meant to go, Yeah, you're right, fucker.
But politics starts at an early age. You don't need to go to college to be exposed to politics. I think it starts from year naught, you know. It's in little sayings and songs, nursery rhymes, fables. They're charged with morality for kids. And I remember I must have been as young as sort of 6 or 7, because it was infant school. And the first Monday of every month, the deputy headmaster used to do a fable at assembly, and it was his best day, okay? Now, he used to make it last about half an hour to 40 minutes, and he thought he was Peter Ustinov. And looking back, I think all the other teachers were going, look at that fucking wanker showing off to 6-year-olds. He'd take his shoes off as well, yeah. And I'll tell one that he told, a fable, okay? It was a fable of the two mice, the lazy mouse and the industrious mouse. All through the summer, there was lots of berries on the trees, the sun was shining, it was lovely and warm. The lazy mouse would be eating berries off the tree, taking a bite, throwing it away, there was loads, right? The industrious mouse, he'd have a berry, sure. But he'd eat it all and he'd save one as well. Lazy mouse, forget that, oh, just eating berries, running around, okay. The industrious mouse, whatever, said, you know what, you should, you know, look forward to winter because those berries won't be, oh, fuck off, you square, you know. I've adapted it, right? So anyway, you get the picture. So all through the summer, he's eating berries, he's running around, sunbathing. industrious mouse, he's busy, he's eating berries, collecting berries, freeze-drying them, chopping wood with a little axe that he's fashioned out of a twig and a tiny little sliver of flint, and he's tied it on with a horse hair, and thus making it easier for him to stockpile wood for the much colder season. He hasn't got a fire at the moment, he's too hot, if anything. Just lying there like, oh. But come winter, burn the wood, make a fire. So, last summer. So, to cut a long story, I'm making it last longer than he did, for fuck's sake. Right. So, autumn comes, same pattern. Lazy mouse, he's just fucking about eating the last of the berries, right? The industrious mouse, collecting the last of the berries, and he's got too much wood, if you want, in my opinion, but it's not going to run out. The stuff at the back's probably damp. Circulate it. Doesn't know what he's doing, but he's doing his best. And the lazy mouse, he's just having a laugh. He's loving autumn. He's just kicking through the leaves. Underneath the leaves. You can't see him because he's too cool, but you can see the leaves sort of move like that. You sort of go, I can't say that it's just lazy mouse. You can't, but that's what's happening. Don't think it's a ghost or something, or it's just, if you could go in there like with a really high-tech sort, you know, like in Discovery Channel, go, you'd probably see the lazy mouse going. And winter comes. The ground is cold and hard. There's no berries on the trees anymore. It's freezing, okay? The lazy mouse is out there, he's scurrying around. He can't find anything. The industrious mouse is in his cottage that he's built out of just odds and ends. Roaring twig fire. Pipe! Rocking chair. Or a pebble, just a pebble. Sort of modern. And don't they hibernate? This is bollocks, isn't it? These mice didn't, anyway. So he's there, and there's a knock at the door. He thinks, who's that? So he goes over to the little door. Tiny knob, obviously. What do you want? It's obvious what he wants, isn't it? And he goes, oh, well, it's cold, and I'm hungry. And there's, well, definitely smokes now. But that's not my porn mag.
Right? He goes, well, I did warn you, didn't I? Yeah. Never mind. Come on in and share with me. Where's the moral there? What is the moral of that tale? Fuck around, do what you want, then scrounge off a do-gooder. It's a terrible lesson for kids. Most of the kids in my class kept that up. He also told the one about the boy who cried wolf. A boy looking after his sheep. Gets a bit bored. It is boring. Just making sure you got all... Probably tiring as well, because if you're counting them, you're probably getting a bit drowsy, aren't you? Anyway, so gets a bit bored. Nothing to do here in the Bible. Anyway, so, a long time ago. And he goes, it was just a Monday. That's the worst, isn't it? And he's just bored. And he goes, I know what. I'll have a laugh. And he goes, wolf, 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 wolf. And the villagers come up and goes, where's the wolf? They go, no, there's no wolf. He goes, oh, you're four. So the next day, he thinks, well, that worked a treat. I'll do that again. He goes, wolf, wolf, wolf. Where's the wolf this time? Still no wolf. Oh, you're oh. Third day, there really is a wolf. And he goes, wolf, 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 wolf. But the villagers don't come because they don't believe him. And we were told the moral of that is never tell a lie. No, it isn't. The moral of that is never tell the same lie twice. Terrible lesson for kids. Nursery rhymes. Do you know, Jack and Jill went up the hill to fetch a pail of water. Jack fell down and broke his crown, which I later learned meant his cranium. I thought his hat fell off or something. And Jill came tumbling after. And that is a true fable of the time, of the, I think the 16th century, about two illicit lovers who used to go up to the hill out of the sight of the villagers and have it off behind their spouse's back. What's the moral there? For, what is that? Don't fuck around with sluts or you get your head caved in. No. I've never worked out what the moral of Humpty Dumpty is. I can only think of don't sit on a wall if you're an egg. How is that applicable to an 8-year-old human? I don't... You mean that go, well, what's the moral there? Huh. Don't sit on a wall if you're an egg. What? Of course I wouldn't. What do you mean, if you're an egg? It's not going to happen, is it? What... Are there eggs reading that going, phew, I'm just going to jump up there, fucking hell. Good job. Oh, God. But don't get on there if you're an egg. No, why not? Look, read that. Fuck. Don't send horses to perform medical procedures. Of course they couldn't put him together again. Of course. It's obvious, they haven't got the dexterity. Obvious. I wouldn't have said them in the first place. Experiment. Don't experiment. They can't... They can't even scrub up. They can't... They haven't got thumbs, let alone opposable thumbs. They couldn't sew to save their life. They couldn't... If I had to design a perfect egg-crushing device, it would be a hoof. Doesn't matter if they're king's horses or Steptoe's horse. All the king's horses. Certainly don't send all of them. It's going to be chaos. What if we'd have been invaded by France that day? The bloke comes running to the bloke in charge. He goes, you in charge of all the king's horses and all the king's men? Yeah. Well, the French are coming. What? Where are all the king's horses and all the king's men? The French are coming to Dover. Quick, where are they? Up to the egg. What? What? The egg. What are you talking about? I sent them to mend an egg. Are you fucking mental? Are you mental? They can't mend an egg. Oh, no. Also... I only know that he is an egg from pictorial evidence. And he is clearly an egg. An egg thing. An egg with eyes. Things, right? And trousers. But that's not mentioned in the whole thing. That would be the first thing I'd mention. Never mind. I go, once, right, there was an egg that could climb walls. Left that out. Can't follow them all. What? If your surname is Dumpty, don't call your firstborn Humpty. He's already an egg. Like, that's not enough of a stigma. How's the baby? It's an egg. Just an egg. Oh, really? What are you going to call it? Humpty Dumpty? Well, don't make it worse. Don't. That is a wind-up. That. Just call him Johnny or something. Just put a balaclava on him. Just say he's the worst they get is Fatty Johnny. Humpty Dumpty, the egg. He's going to get the piss ripped out of him. He's probably jumped off the wall. Oh, so, what is politics? Politics is the art or science of governing. Governing people and governing society. What's the best way to live? How do we live in harmony? That's what we're looking for. Democracy is the closest thing we've got to everyone sort of chipping in. But even that's got problems, you know, who gets the vote? Should everyone get the vote, you know? Dangerous question. The political philosopher Nietzsche said that not all people do deserve the vote and that not all men are born equal. This was classically misinterpreted by Hitler, who went way too far with it. And he just, do you know what I mean? Imagine that. You're a great scholar, Nietzsche, and you write that, and you get called to Hitler and say, all right, Nietzsche, all right, Adolf? Yeah, yeah, just been reading your book. Do you like it? Brilliant. Love all that, love all that. Man and Superman, not everyone's equal, kill all the Jews. Sorry, what? Not everyone's equal, kill all the Jews. I didn't write that. No, I read between the lines. No, I didn't mean it. You've totally misinterpreted the whole point of it. Yeah? Yeah, definitely. It's awful. Oh. It's dreadful. Have you been killing Jewish people? What? Have you been killing Jewish people? Oh. How many have you killed? How many have I killed? 6 minutes. 6 million? Yeah, all right, don't go on about it. I'm not going to do any more. That's it. Leave it at six. Let's move on. Are you staying for tea anyway? Ooh. Yeah, but be careful in future. I won't. Are you writing any other books at the moment? Well, I am, but I'm scared to tell you about them. No, I won't do anything. What's your new book called? My new book is called The Gippos. Do we need them? Not a traditional subject for comedy. The Holocaust? I'll give you that. Probably why Spielberg didn't put a laughter track on Schindler's List. It would have ruined it. When Schindler's List came out in American cinemas, they actually banned popcorn. That's true. And I think that's a great idea. But I think they should ban it in all films. I don't want to go and watch a film with someone grazing next to me. You know what I mean? Obviously, I did it in that because of all the people that died in it. But what about all the people that died in Mad Max? Let's keep it fair. And that was more recent. Well, it was the future, so it was really recent. I think Schindler's List is a fantastic film. And I didn't watch it at the cinema, actually. I got it out on video about a year later, by mistake, because I'd never heard of it. And I was in Blockbuster, sort of late one night. I was a bit drunk. And I thought it was a porn film. No, because I saw 18 Certificate, top shelf. And I thought, oh, black and white, dodgy home movie, you know. German sounding, they're the best. And what swung it was that quote on the back from Barry Norman, have a box of Kleenex ready. Rubbish. I used about two. There was a shower scene. Shut up. Lenny Henry, 30 quid. Fuck off. This lecture, as you've worked out, is about political change. No. But how do you change things? If you want to change society, how do you change things? Well, we're not all in power, by definition. Some of us haven't even got the vote. But if you've got a voice, in our country we've got freedom of speech, you can change things slowly, but you can be heard. And that's one way. And I used to work at University of London Union, and there wasn't a day went by when there wasn't a march that started outside, or people giving out flyers and leaflets and stuff. And I always used to take them to read them, because I wanted to know what people were giving up their time for. And I remember one was a leaflet boycotting Nike and some other designer labels for using third world sweatshops, particularly China. And there was a frightening statistic on this leaflet. I'll never forget. It said that the CEO of Nike has amassed $5.2 billion. And for a female worker in one of his sweatshops in China to earn that, she'd have to work 7 days a week, 8 hours a day, for 10,000 years. But they don't want to. Lazy. There was another thing on there, it's absolutely true. One of the supervisors in one of the sweatshops in China had been accused of sexually assaulting one of the female workers. And he'd been... that's not funny, is it? No. True. And he was suspended but fled the country before he'd come to trial. And the CEO of Nike was asked an awkward question about this at a press conference. And he said, no, he wasn't sexually assaulting her. He was trying to wake her up and must have touched the wrong places. What? That's a bad excuse, isn't it? Touched the... What? Mrs. Chan. Mrs. Chan. Just shout, don't touch her at all. Mrs. Chan. But I love bad excuses when they're sort of embarrassing, sort of heinous things like that. I remember a friend of mine I went to college with was a medical student, and when he did his degree, he did an internship or junior doctorship at University College Hospital. And he was working nights. It was about 1:30 in the morning, and this guy came in, and he had a bottle of sauce stuck up his arse, as you do, and completely disappeared. He hadn't left, like, you know, enough out. He hadn't thought of the return journey. Like, even Hansel and Gretel sort of left breadcrumbs, didn't they? He hadn't thought it through. He was getting so into it, the whole bottle up there, then he couldn't get any purchase. He couldn't... You know, tie a bit of string to it or something. Just think ahead. Or empty it out, fill it with concrete, put a broom handle in it, let that set, then you've got the full length of the bottle and a handle. But he hadn't put as much thought into it as me. Amateur. Now, so, and also, instead of going in there and saying, excuse me, mate, got a sauce bottle stuck up my arse. I know what I was doing, you know what I was doing. Get it out and I won't do it again. Instead of saying that, he went through his whole face-saving rigmarole of filling out an accident report, just making it worse for himself. And this is the excuse he gave, okay? He said, well, what happened was... This is a great excuse, right? He said, I'd been shopping at Safeway, and I came home with my shopping, and I realised that I'd locked myself out of my house. So I put the shopping on the doorstep, and I saw that I'd left open a bedroom window, so I thought I'd get in there. So I tried to climb up the drain pipe, but as I was climbing the drain pipe, my belt broke, and my trousers and pants fell down. I went to grab, I lost my grip, and I fell, and I landed on the bottle that went... straight, and that's what happened. So I went, okay, so got it out for him. When he left, they made an amendment to the accident report. My mate put, this story would be somewhat more believable if Safeway sold their bottles of sauce with condoms already attached. I just thought, oh, the condom, fuck. He knows I'm lying. Why did he put a condom on it anyway? Because he was then going to use it on his chips. How mean is that? If you're into, you know what I mean? Shoving condiments up your arse. Buy two, they're only 79p. I guess, I don't know. One for chips, one for arses. You know where you are. You have to make bad excuses.
My favourite leaflet of all time. I bet some of you haven't even got a favourite leaflet, have you? Sort it out. No, it really is. You'll see why. And I kept it with me for about 3 months and showed it to everyone. It was a leaflet that came round the Union in about 1994, 95. And it was a Terence Higgins leaflet about safe sex. And it was aimed at the last demographic of gay men that weren't taking HIV seriously enough. And so it was very hard-hitting and seen, and it used, like, really sort of colourful language to get the message across. And I remember it so well. And the title of this flyer, you know it's going to be a good leaflet when this is the title. This is the opening gambit, right? It was called, you know, you don't always have to have anal sex. Thanks very much. Think of a couple of old-age pensioners just queuing for their flu jab. They're just browsing, Reader's Digest. What's this one? You know, you don't always have to have anal sex. See, I fucking told you. Right. So, that was what it's called, right? And it was a 10-point plan of alternatives to, you know, that. So, number one, okay? Always started the same as well. Always started with why not, right? Why not, like casual. Like you're saying, like a recipe or something. Why not throw in an onion, right? Right, okay. Number one was this. And it had those little diagrams, like little drawings like you get on safety things on planes. So anyway, number one, 10-point plan. Number one was, think of this as medical advice, okay? Number one was, why not just wank each other off? I've got the new leaflet. Oh, what does it say? Why not just wank each other off? Okay. Oh, yeah. Casual. Number two is great. Again, just a casual suggestion, right? Number two is... What? Always the same. Why not? Right. Number two. Why not come on his back? When is that? This is so casual. Why not? Imagine you queue up to see a GP. They go, the GP will see you now, and he's sort of writing, come in, sit down. What can I do for you? I'm gay and I'm worried about HIV. Come on his back. Number three, whenever I showed this to people, when I got to this one, people were laughing, going, oh, and they went, oh, right? Number three, it's the worst one. Number three is, why not come in his hair? Not the hair. On the back. Come on the back, sure, on you go, go on. Hurry up. Where are you fucking aiming at? Not on the hair. Fuck off, there. Fucking better not. I'm putting on a shower cap. So. Number four. I have not before or since heard such a great use of the term EG as in this next sentence. Number four, I swear, was... Why not come into a piece of fruit, e.g. watermelon? Like, why do you need that? Like, they put it out without that. People are going, well, what fruit? I'm watermelon, thank you. I need to know what fruit. Need to know exactly what fruit. I don't want to get it wrong. I thought arses was all right. I was wrong there. I don't want to make... So watermelon, yeah, good. And on and on. Number 10, I'll just tell you number 10. Because number 10 might be the greatest sentence of all time, right? And I think the bloke writing it was under pressure from his boss. He'd done 9.
And his boss came and said, how's it going? I've done 9. He goes, we need 10. I can't do 10. I'm struggling. I'm doing hair. I'm doing backs. We need 10. You got till 5:30. And this is what he came up with. This is... Right. Number 10, and I swear, right, was... Why not both come out of a window? Why? Why? Ready? And it didn't even say, make sure it's not a ground floor window. Morning. No, this is number 17, number 19. I think they're out. Fucking hell. Oh. Oh, and that leaflet, this is a confession. That leaflet must have affected me. And that was 10 years ago. Last summer, I was walking down Old Compton Street. It was about 10 o'clock at night. And I was walking, and just before I got to Mamma Mia, a pigeon shat on me. Obviously a pigeon. I went, oh. Then I went... What did I expect to see? Two going, got him. Oh. That is the best leaflet of all time, isn't it? But a serious message. And I think the last successful protest was to bring the gay age of consent down to 16, which is what I was talking about earlier. It forces the hand of democracy being heard, and there was millions of people on that march saying, this is what we want the law changed. And the government, it was 1997, I said, yeah, if that many people want it, that's a referendum, change the law. And they brought the gay age of consent down to 16. I didn't see many 16-year-olds on the march. It was... No. It was mainly 42-year-old men with leather trousers, shaved grey hair and backpacks. But 16-year-olds were busy doing homework or watching it on telly probably going, we're going to get buggered. No, they were just... So... No mothers on the march. No 55-year-old women going, what do we want? For our sons to get done at the arse. When do we want it? Well, soon, before they're 17, please. But I don't think it matters who fights for your right to take it up the arse. So... At this point, I just want to make sure we've covered gays and Nazis. Good. Okay, we can move on. Gays and Nazis. But enough about the Conservative Party. Satire. They have had their fair share of sleaze, haven't they, the Conservative Party? And not like... I mean, all parties get a little bit of sleaze, but it's not like cool stuff like Labour, like punching a farmer or having two jags. There's his... Do you remember that Conservative MP, Stephen Milligan, found dead with a noose around his neck, amyl nitrate laced orange in his mouth, bag on his head, laid his tights... I'll be honest, I think he was wanking. But again, freedom to do what you want, as long as you don't hurt anyone. I mean, he hurt himself, he went too far. That is the accidentally... You know, that is the problem with the old asphyxie wank. You've got to get it just right, or you go too far and you actually die. And then your wanking days are over. So, you know, if I was into that, wanking into an inch of my life, wearing ladies' tights and sucking oranges with a bag on my head... I'd have a close friend, I'd just say, listen, I love nearly killing myself whilst wanking, wearing all this stuff. If I actually get it wrong one day and accidentally kill myself, come round, leave the noose, get rid of all that other stuff. Just say it was suicide. And how do they know they're into all that? How do they first... Was he getting ready one day and tying his tie, went a bit tight, went, oh. Fuck it now. And when they do that, they nearly die, and they get it right, and they survive, then they're swinging there when they finish, they get a glimpse of themselves in the mirror, they ever go, what the fuck am I doing? The first apocryphal tale, or urban myth, I ever heard was about masturbation. Not surprising. You hear those sort of things when you're 14, 15, and that is a 14-year-old boy's main pastime. And it was told to us by a guy called David Beasley, and I talked about him on my animal show. He's the one that said, if you get captured by cannibals, they show you pornographic pictures, so you get an erection and there's more meat. And usually urban myths start with, oh, a friend of mine, right? Not this one. He said, I was wanking the other day, lads. Go on. He said, I was on my bed at home and I was naked. And I had my eyes shut and I was listening to music, I had my headphones on. And when I'd finished, I opened my eyes and my mum had been in and left me some tea and biscuits. David? Death? Oh, dear. There's my firstborn. Whacking away like a little monkey, isn't he? Very proud of him, very proud of him. If he carries on like that, he's going to come. I better leave this so he knows his mother saw him. Think of that. Your mother walking in on you furiously masturbating. The other way round is worse. But we believed that at the time. I think he believed it. He told me another story, which I have no reason not to believe. He said his brother was going for a job interview and he had to change trains at Crewe. And he was on the platform of the train and he shat himself. As you do. Just filled with diarrhea. And he thought, oh, fuck. And he had to make the interview. So he looked, he had 10 minutes to the train. And he looked, saw Millets. So he scrouched over to Millets and went in and went, quick, mate, Levi's 36. Right, okay, got the bag, made the train, went straight to the toilet, locked himself in, put the bag on, took his trousers off, took his pants off, poked him out the window, covered, cleaned himself up, flushed it all away, opened the bag, it was a jacket. Oh. And when he told us that, we were going, oh, fuck, what would you do? What would you do? What would you do? And my mate Bob, trying to be cool, went, just cut the corners off the carrier back. Oh, you're going to still make the interview then? Brilliant. Morning. Oh, that. Shat myself. What's the pension scheme like? Like, you think, yeah. Phew. Ooh. Thank God for a carrier bag to hide my offal. Unbelievable. There are more drastic forms of protest, though, than marching and leaflets. In 1963, a Vietnamese Buddhist monk, as a protest against the Vietnam regime, went out into a public place, set himself alight and burnt to death. Did no good, because that's not a threat or a deterrent. If a little monk comes up to you and he goes, you better stop all those things you're doing, otherwise I'm going to set myself alight. You're going to set yourself alight. Fill your boots, mate. I don't... And no one cared, and I bet you don't even know his name, do you? I do, I've looked it up. It's absolutely true. His name was Thick Quang Duck. Or Crispy Duck to his mates. I've heard. Oh. John Lennon, a less drastic form of protest against the Vietnam War. The famous sleeping. He stayed in bed for a week with Yoko Ono, and that was it. And people were going, brilliant. Genius. That's excellent. And, you know, I bet that little monk was fucking gutted. Hold on, what? Burn yourself to death or shag Yoko? Oh, I love it when rock stars get involved. I absolutely love it. The political song. Ooh. Look out, mate. He's got a guitar. He's saying what he thinks in C. It's okay when it's people like, you know, Bob Dylan. But I love it when pop stars have a go. Yeah. Do you remember Culture Club's classic? They've been singing Karma Chameleon. Oh, for too long. And they came up with the war song. Ooh. And in that, they go, war, war is stupid, and people are stupid. How's that going to change your mind? I mean, if you're into war, you're loving war, you love it, it's your favourite thing. You go, I mean, you're in a plane, you're going to bomb the shit out of a country, oh, I can't wait to get there, I love bombing people, oh, nearly there, put the radio on, oh. War, war is stupid, and people are stupid. We're going home. Boy George there, he piled on the pounds when he gave up the smack, didn't he? There's a fable there, kids. Every action has a consequence, so... Billy Joel, after singing things like Uptown Girl, he then revealed his classic, his protest song against the world, We Didn't Start the Fire. And in that song, it's basically a list, in chronological order, right, from 1949 to 1989, and he just mentions sort of 6 to 8 things each verse. I just read, he goes, Harry Truman, Doris Day, Red China, Johnny Ray, South Pacific Water Whistle, Joe DiMaggio, Joe McCarthy, Richard Nixon, Sturt, Becker Television, North Korea, South Korea, Marilyn Monroe. That's not a song. That's a conversation with Rain Man. I think the first protest song that actually made a difference was Do They Know It's Christmas? And particularly pointed to us in Britain because we used to own and run Africa. And then the end of the 50s, they wanted independence and slowly we started giving it back to Africa. And by the end of the 60s, it was totally Africa-owned and Africa-ruled. Of course, in the 80s, we get a phone call and... Thatcher answers, hello. Hello, it's Africa. What do you want? We're all starving and that. Oh, starving. Give me that phone. You should have thought of that before you wanted independence. Yeah, we didn't know there was going to be a drought. Drought? I'll give you a fucking drought. In the long, hot summer of 1976, we had a hosepipe ban in Reading. Yes. In drought. My poor mum having to make loads of journeys with a bowl of water for the lawn. Under the cover of darkness. With her back. We've all got fucking problems, mate. Drought. There was a government advert at the time that said, save water, have a bath with a friend. Which I did. I say a friend, he was more a friend of my granddad's. £10's a lot to a kid in Reading. We used to call him Granddad Charlie, actually. He wasn't our granddad, he was just an old bloke who used to live across the road from us and used to always come round to play with us whenever he saw our parents go out. But, what? Lovely old man. He used to play with us, he taught me to wrestle. And, what? Lovely old man, lovely old man. Oh, Granddad Charlie. And he used to do magic tricks. Oh, it was great. And he used to have a magic hat. And he used to sit down and put the magic hat on his lap. And he'd show us there was nothing in it. There was nothing in it. And he'd put the magic hat on his lap. And, we couldn't tell our parents because it stopped the magic. I think that's how it works. And then we're only little, and we used to have to queue up with our eyes shut, and we'll take it in turns in feeding the little rabbit in that hat. Poor, whatever it got to me, it was scared stiff, poor little thing, it was slow. And it was always in a bad way, didn't have any ears or any fur. And, poor little thing. I made it sick once. It's not true. There is no Granddad Charlie. I wasn't abused. And if I was, I'd save it for my autobiography. That's the way to do it. So anyway, Thatcher on the phone to Africa goes, look, I can't come myself, but I'll send you lead singer of the Boomtown Rats. he's not doing anything. I went, all right, yeah, don't call again. See, the protest song about the greatest living African is Special AKA's Free Nelson Mandela. That's what they said. They said, Free Nelson Mandela. And it worked, because like that, 6 years later, he was out anyway, so... Incarcerated for a quarter of a century, Mandela. Released in 1990, so he's been out about 14 years now. And he hasn't reoffended, so I think he's going straight. Which shows you prison does work. I came here to change attitudes tonight, and I think I've done that. I want to leave you with something now to show that knowledge is power. It's a true story, actually, and we were talking earlier about third world sweatshops, and they really are awful places, and there's women and children that are abused, and they literally get a few pence an hour, and it's for big conglomerate companies to make billions of pounds. And I was shopping with a friend of mine a couple of years ago. His name was Rob, and he had a sudden death in the family, and he had to get a suit for the funeral. And he was in a band, and he was on the dole. He didn't have a suit to his name. We went to these sort of cheap places in Oxford Street, and one bloke said, oh, I've got a lovely suit, £29. And I thought, what is this going to look like? I couldn't wait for him to have to buy the suit. I went over to it, and it was all right, and I was gutted. It was just like a classic sort of dark suit, and it was nice, and it had an electric blue sort of satin lining, and he was made up. So just to piss on his bonfire, I said, well, if it's that cheap, and it's that well made, and it's not in a sale, it means someone's been exploited. He went, what? I went, yeah, it's awful. It's like women and children exploited, and you'd just be adding to the problem, right? And he didn't buy it. And he went and sold a guitar at Record and Tape Exchange and bought a suit for £150. And I felt bad, but then I thought, well, I was probably right. If, you know, they probably have used, like, really awful, cheap labour. And so just by doing that, and even though it's one person's little change, if everyone changes it, then we can all, do you know what I mean, make a difference. Still, £29, though. It's all right, isn't it? Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Good night. Has everyone heard of Carl Pilkington? Because there's a bit... He's my producer on my radio show. I'll just quickly... But for those who haven't heard of him... He's a guy, talking about attitudes, he's a man whose attitude hasn't changed from about the age of 5. He's from Manchester, and you can ask him anything, and he's got an opinion on it. It's usually, it were rubbish, but... Right, example, okay. I tell him about I'm doing this show. I said I'm doing a show called Politics. He went, why? And you can't answer it. And he said, you want to talk about that David Blunkett? I went, why, what's he done? He went, oh, he's up to his old tricks again. He's only gone and banned people having sex in public, hasn't he? And I went, well, yeah, but surely that's a good thing, Carl. And he went, yeah, but would he have done it if he could see? And there's a twisted logic, you know. All right, we were once on air, this was. We were talking about blind dates, you know, things. Have you had a blind date? And halfway through, Carl just piped up and went, I went on a blind date once. I went, are you good? Yeah, I was all right, yeah. And what did you do? I went for a drink and that. Was she nice? Yeah, she was really good. Yeah, she was really fun. Yeah, it was great. Did you see her again? No. She had a problem with her marrow. I went, oh, what? She had a problem with her marrow. Her bone marrow. I went, oh. She went, yeah, she had a wasting disease. So I thought, what's the point? On air. And so I flushed, I went, Carl, if she's listening, you're for it. He went, she'll be dead by now. Unbelievable. I'll just tell you one more before I go, one more, right. This was last year, during Wimbledon week. Again, on air, he said, did you watch any of Wimbledon last night? I went, no. What was it? They let some little wheelchair fellas have a go on centre court. Little wheelchair fellas. No irony. Right? And I went, all right, yeah. Any good? He went, no, rubbish. I went, Why? He went, they couldn't get a rally going. And I went, well, Carl, to be fair, they're in chairs on grass. He went, don't put it on telly then. And I'm on air. And I went, oh, wow. I said, everyone's entitled to be, you know. Tell you, well, yeah. Well, let them do something they can do then. And I went, foolishly, I went, like what? And he said, swing ball. Thanks very much. Good night. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.